number of years ago, when I was teaching at Assumption High School, at the end of Mass, a man came up to me, never saw him before, 65 or so years of age, very hoarse voice, and he said, "Father, I have throat cancer. I've been out of the church for 35 years. I'm completely lost. I've committed every sin in the book except for murder." He said, "The only certainty I have in my life is on the day of my death, my soul is damned to hell. It's the only thing I know for sure. Father," then he asked me the most interesting question I've ever been asked in my life. The man never saw me before, did not know me, except that I am a priest. "Here's the question." Because he said he's only got a year and a half or so to live with this throat cancer. "Father, can you teach me how to die?" He repeated the question. "Father, can you teach me how to die?" I had that forever recorded in my head. I looked at him and I said, "I will introduce you to the one who will teach you how to die. I want to talk to you about Jesus. I want to talk to you about his life, his death, and his resurrection. I want to talk to you about confession. I want to talk to you about the Eucharist, because Jesus is not in the past. He's in the present, and he can save you." I thought of this gentleman when I looked at the readings today, because the readings talk about resurrection. They talk about bringing a boy back from the dead. They talk about bringing a man back from the dead. Jesus didn't do that just to be nice. Jesus did that as a kind of prophecy, saying, "I have power over death, and I'm preparing you for the ultimate test when they put me to death and when Jesus would rise from the dead." Jesus' resurrection, very different from this and from that, rising from the dead and resuscitation. Jesus changed death forever, because when Jesus rose from the dead, he redefined death. He redefined life. For the apostles, they said, "I'll give the rest of my life to this Jesus who can heal." St. Paul, who is like the man, wayward, lost, Jesus raised St. Paul from the dead in a spiritual way when he forgave his sins. And St. Paul was able to say, "I'm not talking about the past. I'm talking about this revelation of Jesus in the present who has changed my life." This gentleman, going back to Assumption High School, he started making confessions, started coming to Mass, started to pray. About a year and a half later, I watched his body deteriorate, but I watched his soul get stronger. The last time I saw him, he gave me his guitar, a Yamaha. He said, "I've had this for years." He said, I give it to you because I play a lot of music." He gave me that guitar. The last message I got from him was from the VA hospital in Toma. And from the VA, he sent a message. He said, "Thank you. I am ready." I think of this man, Jerry, many, many times during the year. He died a saint. But he died because he died in joy and in hope, because he knew who Jesus is, not who he was, but who he is, and that Jesus Christ, from these readings we see it, redefines death and he redefines life. I use that as a platform to begin to talk about Casa Hogar, because I work with kids. We have 64 children at our casa. 64 kids who have been deeply wounded by life, deeply wounded by other people. They lose the ability to trust in people, and they lose the ability to trust in God. Children come to us age 4 to 10. None go to church. Almost none are baptized. And they're looking for a reason to hope. Let's back up just a moment. I'd like to tell you, too, about the founder of our house. Because the founder of our house was a man who was able to look at all the sufferings in life, all the bad things in life, and to be able to rise above them. He was a man who had that encounter with Jesus. The founder of Casa Hogar, the founder of a number of things, Father Joe Balieski. There's a video out about him, and I know they've been showing it at the school and different things. It'd be great if you have not seen it. Meet this Father Joe Balieski through his work. Because here is a man who, in spite of the pains in the world, was able to ask a very critical question. I know Jesus, and therefore I ask him, what do you want me to do? Who do you want me to be? And his deepest peace was found in becoming a priest. But he made the prayer, Lord, if I ever get to priesthood, I would ask to work in the missions and work with the poor. It took him a number of years after priesthood, but he was finally able to go to Bolivia, where 60 years ago he began the parish. He worked there for 8 years. He then came back to the U.S., and then he went to Peru. There was a bishop that had called him and asked to visit with him and ask him if he would be the founding pastor of a slum. The government did not know what to do with thousands and tens of thousands of people who were flooding into the city from the country. They were living under bridges, in parks, and they said, let's give them a parcel of land. It's out in the desert on the edge near the ocean. We will call it the Village of the Savior, Villa El Salvador. We'll give each of these poor families a little plot of land from which they can begin a new life. No roads, no electricity, no water. And the bishop asked Father Jose if he would get permission from our bishop to be the founding pastor of about 150 to 200,000 people. Would you do that? That'd be scary. Father Jose, what I loved about him was he said, I'm just a pencil in God's hand. And he'd say, I don't know what I can do. I can just do a little. I only have two hands. But he said, if I do the possible, maybe God can do the impossible. He became legendary for his 15 years that he worked as pastor in that slum. Working with tens of thousands, even up to 200,000 people. He had the opportunity to meet Pope John Paul. Pope John Paul visited his parish. And he said, by that time, he said, we have better houses, we have some electricity, we have water, we have some roads. But he said, the children live in the streets. How will they ever learn to be moms and dads? There are hundreds and hundreds of orphanages in Latin America. But he said, I feel that God is calling me to be just that one grain of sand, to be able to help a group of young people. And I will found an orphanage where they will be taught by married couples. Pope John Paul gave a donation to the archdiocese that was ultimately given to Father Jose, and he founded the orphanage at the age of 62. Again, would you want to have a bunch of kids at age 62? He gave the rest of his life to serving them. Ultimately, he retired in the year 2000 and passed the baton on to a Polish seminarian trained for our diocese. And then he was ordained and sent to be his successor, his name, Father Sebastian. He worked for 13 years. And for the last 3 years, I've been down there. I've been making visits to the orphanage for 20 years. And I've known Father Jose when I was backpacking back about 40 years ago in Villa El Salvador, in the Village of the Savior. So our lives have been connected for many years. The family model that Father Jose has is a more expensive kind of model for a casa. Because you will find many of these orphanages where there's one adult for every 20 children. Or one adult for every 30 children. I know one house that has one adult for every 40 children. What's the difference between babysitting and forming a family? I don't know how you can form a family with so many under your care. But when you break it down and you have a married couple responsible for eight children, we have four families of boys. Each family has eight. Each family is led by a married couple. We have four families of girls in the second floor. And these girls, everybody ranges between 4 and 17. And these married couples then work very closely with them. I work with them as a kind of pastor, and we have some other team members that work with them. But you know, really, the vision is to be able to give them hope. To be able to bring them to a healing in their relationships. To be able to bring them to an ability to trust not only in people, but to be able to trust in God. And speaking to them, I'll say, children, life is going to come at you like a tsunami. If we're not ready for it, it will smash us. That's why in these few years, in these poquísimos años that we have here at Casa, we work with you. We got to get you up to this level so that when you leave here at 17, you've got the courage and the trust to be able to face life like it is. We continue even to work with them after they leave in a transition program, because all children, all young people need some help even at 17. But you begin to see these children grow more and more in their ability to trust and to be able to look at the future with a hope. Our work then, we work with the 64 kids, but we also are working with their families, because the hope is that these children, when they get to 17, they will be able to not only be looking at a better education, they will be able to go back into their family systems, whatever they might be. Usually a grandma or grandpa, aunt and uncle, maybe a parent, or maybe a brother or a sister, and try to be people that can help their families to rise up to a higher level as well. There's other ways, though, that CASA helps many other peoples. For example, this January, we are going to have what's called an eyeglass clinic. We are collecting pairs of glasses from the Lions Club. We'll get thousands of pairs of glasses. 40 volunteers will come in January, convert our house into a clinic. The little children from our house will be elves, taking care of all the little tasks around the place. Thousands of people will come into our place, and they will meet with four eye doctors, taking their turns. In 1 week, we will give out 5,000 pair of used glasses. And for many of the people from the last time we had it, they say, Father, would you please tell the people who make this possible, thank you, because my life has changed. I can see like I haven't seen for 20 years. Just this past week, Project Milk delivered 800 bags of milk, powdered milk, 50 pounds per bag. We only use 100 bags. The other bags will be given away to other orphanages, rehab centers, soup kitchens, parishes, seminary, divided up in the Diocese of Lurin. The impact? It affects thousands and thousands of people's lives. There's another part, though, that I find most interesting. I was a vocation director for 10 years in this diocese. What I'm doing at the CASA is a house of formation, because we have so many visitors that come during the year, mostly from our diocese. This is part of the vision of Father Jose, the founder. He said, not only is it important that we help people in other countries, he said, we need to learn from them. He said, what we could learn from them, endurance, perseverance, how to be able to be in bad situations and not lose hope. He said, I would like to bring young people from the Diocese of La Crosse to Casa Hogar. You don't have to do a lot of work. I just want you to meet the kids, work with the kids, talk to the kids, love the kids, get to know the people in the area. You will learn how to be missionaries. You will learn a mission spirituality and begin to ask the question, the critical question, Lord, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to be in my life? I've been doing this for 20 years, going down to CASA with groups, and I've seen the changes in them, and now I work full time with it. We've had 120 people visit us since January. We have many groups coming yet during this year. Not only groups that come for a week or two, we have young people that come down, they get interviewed, they apply, and they live with us for 3 to 6 months. We have one young woman completing a year. Their lives forever changed. The impact that they have on the little kids at CASA as big brothers and big sisters, inspirational. But the impact that goes in reverse to help them prepare for their life back in the Diocese of La Crosse, powerful. Because these kids, these young people, these adults will go back to the diocese and say, I want to give my life away in a deeper sense. So as I look at CASA, we're working with kids, we're working with families, we're working with many other people in the community, and we're working with volunteers here and there. And then we have so many schools involved. And like I asked the question, who's the little girl that you sponsor here? I'll have to do that wherever I go into parishes and record their voices or show pictures, and I send that back to South America. The little kids love it to be able to know that there's people 5,000 miles away who care about them. Today we're going to be doing a collection. But actually, we don't have to do a collection today because I just heard you got a second collection. That makes me third collection. You're out of money. So, well, no, we planned it this way. So what we can do is, I've got a brochure. If you can pass those down from the ends, give the adults a copy of that brochure. This explains some of our program. There's a part of this program that is very interesting because 1/5 of our budget comes from sponsorship program like you do for Sarah. That's done all over the diocese. 1/5 of our income comes from that sponsorship program. Do you know who runs that program? Annie Pangborn. Have you ever heard of her? What parish is she from? I don't know if it's this church or the other church, but she's here. She's in this parish of the Holy Family, and she runs this whole program. Your lives and our lives, deeply connected. Take that home. Put it on your kitchen table. Let that little picture of Carolina, this little girl age 6, inspire you. Take this envelope home. Put that on your kitchen table. Talk about it in your family. What are the blessings God has shared with us, and what are blessings we can share with other kids who don't have the same blessings as we? If you write a check, you can write the check to Holy Family Parish. Father will put that together in one check and send it to us. If you put cash in here, it doesn't matter. Whatever you put in here, in this envelope, whether it's in the first collection, second collection, or third collection, it all goes to Casa Hogar, to the children. We have a prayer card. Father Jose died in the year 2006. The bishop has started the canonization process. Again, one of the holiest priests we've ever had. Very, very simple, but totally giving. I have these prayer cards in the entrance. Please take one as you leave. Many people write to us and they say, would you please pray for this need or that? But you can also take this and ask the intercession of Father Joel Walieski for the needs that you have. There's a legacy program in this canonization. If you'd like to be involved in that, let us know. Finally, thank you. Thank you from the children in various ways. The bishop has asked me to have the children make rosaries. We started this several years ago, and they make over 2,000 rosaries every year. The little 5-year-olds punch the little, they put the holes in the beads. 7- and 8-year-olds can put the beads on, and the 9- or 10-year-olds tie the knots, and the older kids that tie the more difficult knots to put the cross on. Every confirmation student in the Diocese of La Crosse will receive one of these rosaries made by our kids. And each rosary symbolizes a big thank you from us to you. Also, there are so many people that say, would you please pray for this or pray for that? People email us. There's an email address on the brochure. They will email that development address and say, would you pray for this need in my family? We put those in our box of prayers at the altar, and we say those prayers. When I talk to the kids, I say, look, we have to pray for our benefactors. I can't force you to come to Mass, maybe on Sunday, but not the rest of the week. But I'm asking you to come to Mass because we have a moral obligation to pray for the people who make everything possible for us. So our kids come to Mass. On any one day, I have 3/4 of the kids. They might take a day off, maybe 2 days off, but the rest of the week, the kids are there, age 4 to 17, at daily Mass, 6:15 in the morning. But again, what are they? Our intentions at petition time for our benefactors, for the people who make possible our life. And that is their thank you to you. So as we take a look at the readings today, the power of Jesus to rise from the dead and help us rise from the dead. I saw it in that man with cancer, Jerry. I've seen it in countless people throughout my years as priest. I see it right now in the lives of the children who are able to rise from the death of the problems that they come from. And as they rise from that death, to be able to give them hope, not just in themselves, but to be able to have a hope in God so that when life comes at them, they're able to meet that with courage. I thank you in the name of the children for whatever you can do to help us at CASA. And in turn, in our encounters with the volunteers, it all comes back to the diocese and it helps us to be more connected to others, more connected to the Lord, and help us to ask that critical question too. Lord, how can I be a better missionary? Thank you.